Stressed out? Need sleep? The cold weather bringing out those aches and pains or arthritis? There's never been a better time to try cannabis. Check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake and learn about the natural way to relax and escape all that 2020 stress. The greenhouse is locally owned, and they love helping people who are new to cannabis. They've got a great flower selection of the best Michigan-grown buds and the biggest pre-roll selection around. Don't want to smoke? No problem. There's vape carts, tinctures, concentrates, and everyone's favorite, edibles, like gummies, chocolates, peppermint bark, breath sprays, even the original Mackinac Island fudge. So check out the greenhouse of Walled Lake. 21 and over welcome, no med card needed. They also offer senior and veterans discounts and have a great loyalty rewards program. The Greenhouse of Walled Lake. That's greenhousemi.com. Hey, greetings, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome to the week that was on Deadline Detroit. I am your host, Craig Folly. So glad to be here today. And I have wonderful, wonderful panel here today to help us break down the news of the week. Although it's impossible to go back the full week because so much stuff happens in any given day. It's exhausting. We were just discussing this before we went on the air here. We are all very, very tired. But I'd like to welcome my guest anyway. Alan Lengel, of course, is the editor and co-founder of Deadline Detroit. Thank you, sir, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Nancy Derringer of Deadline Detroit is back with us, back from vacay.
He's never getting out of that recliner for the rest of his life. I just know. You know, this is part
couple more weeks. I realize
part of his convalescence from this knee surgery. But I can tell by the way he's kind of oozing into it like melted butter that this is like.
it does have a certain Archie Bunker vibe to it these days.
I'm a lazy boy for life.
There you go. Hey, good Michigan company there. All right. I'd also like to welcome Portia Roberson, who's the executive director at Focus Hope. Welcome back.
Hello, everybody.
And hello. Nancy Kaffer of the Detroit Free Press editorial board is back with us once again. Hello.
Hi.
And I did mention this, you know, beforehand. I am tired. I mean, this is exhausting what we've been going through as a nation in the wake, of course, of what happened last Wednesday. We were still in shock, I think, when we did the show last week, sort of trying to process our emotions around all of this. But now the consequences are starting to come to bear in that the president was impeached for a second time. That's never been done before. I mean,
I feel like you just can't impeach him enough.
just keep doing it until it sticks. One of these times it's going to stick, I suppose. Right. But I mean,
you know that 50% of all presidents have been impeached for Donald Trump.
But I mean, I get it. I understand the need for somebody to pay for what happened to this assault on the Capitol. And the more we learn about it, the uglier it's getting. I mean, some of these videos that have been coming out show that the intent of these people was not just some peaceful protest. These were some angry, riotous, murderous people. We have, you know, six people now connected to this that are now dead. And people are starting to pay. The FBI making all kinds of arrests of people who were stupid enough to take selfies while they were in the Capitol or take videos of themselves. For people who are apparently tech savvy, they don't quite know how the FBI works. And if they really want to believe in the deep state, well, guess what? This is your opportunity to find out firsthand how deep that state is.
You didn't even have to take a selfie. All you had to do was take a phone into the Capitol, from what I understand. They've got, I mean, they know if you pass through those doors, the FBI knows who you are. And, you know, it's like the same. I think it's funny that the same people who are worried about being microchipped by a vaccine are willingly carrying around a device in their pockets that microchips them.
We're already microchipped. We are already microchipped.
Right.
My brother-in-law is a law enforcement officer, and he said to my husband a few years ago, if you ever decide to kill someone, just leave your phone at home, buddy. Just leave your phone at home.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's apparently how they just solved the overwhelming, you know, a huge percentage of cases now is pinging where you were off a cell phone tower.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but here's something funny. Another way that these people are getting caught, and we'll get into the impeachment in just a second, but I did want to remind this. Sally, my friend Sally told me about this, that there are a bunch of women that changed their profiles on like Bumble.
I saw this, Craig. I was about to talk about it.
You tell the story.
They went on Bumble and made themselves, they changed their profiles out to be these conservatives. and like started talking to these conservative guys about MAGA and were you there? And the guys were so busy bragging. And as soon as they get all the information, they turn it over to the FBI. I thought that was the best thing ever. I'm like, way to go, women.
That is a
good use of a dating site right there.
It's a fantastic. You remember early in the Trump presidency, there were all these articles about dudes complaining that they couldn't get dates on dating sites because they said they voted for Trump. It's like, Let's think about it.
How is that going to that's going to totally reinforce that whole incel narrative, though, for these guys, because, you know, even the women that they think are interested in them are rejecting them now and turning them into the FBI. It's a double whammy. OK, impeachment. We saw this the other day. It was bipartisan. 10 Republicans in the House actually had guts and did the right thing and recognized the president's actions for what they were, inciting an insurrection at the Capitol, and voted to impeach. And I realize there's only 5 days left in this guy's presidency. But as I said, there has to be some sort of punishment for this. And this is really the only remedy, I suppose, that they have, unless there are some sort of criminal charges that are coming down the line. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. How did everybody feel about it? I mean, I watched it. I listened to the arguments and of course, rolled my eyes like everybody else, but it almost seemed like we had to do this.
I think when you get to the point where impeaching a president is on the table, you don't have any good options, because either you have a president who has done things that where the impeachment is an appropriate response to, and you have to go forward with that, or you don't. And then you set this terrible, dangerous precedent of not applying the appropriate remedy. It's not good for the country, but it's not that impeachment isn't good for the country. It's being in this position isn't good for the country. And once you're here, you're looking for the least worst option, right? There's no good outcome here. It's not good for us to go through this process once, much less twice.
Alan, go ahead.
I find it's a little frustrating. I mean, it's like you feel like it's something you have to do, but in the end, what's the outcome? I mean, could they charge him criminally after he's out of office? They could charge him with sedition. They could certainly make a case, but it might be a tough case to make in court in federal court there. But I fear that. I mean, now we have one of the QAnon Congress members saying, day one when Biden's in office, I'm filing papers for impeachment or whatever, and. I fear that it may be becoming a very common tool to try to, ram the other party. I mean, as long as the Democrats control the House, things are okay. But, once the GOP gets a hold of it and decides that they don't like the president, I wonder how much easier it'll be to get a impeachment proceeding going.
Well, I'm just wondering how long the GOP is going to be the GOP, based on what we're witnessing these last few days. I mean, this party's got some serious trouble. I've been saying this for years, that they're going to pay a hefty price for their allegiance to Donald Trump.
Well, they haven't yet. I mean, a lot of people still voted for him. A huge percentage of Republicans, when they're surveyed and asked whether they consider themselves an affinity for Trump or for the Republican Party, a huge percentage of them say for Trump, that they don't ID as Republicans. I mean, we see people in congressional Republicans taking some steps back from Trump. We see a lot of them not. We see people like Mitch McConnell expressing disapproval. But here in Michigan, we have a Michigan GOP chair race where candidate Ron Weiser's vice chair candidate is Michonne Maddock, who is part of the organization of the National Women for Trump group, who spoke at the rally prior to the day before the riot, who's been involved in the Stop the Steal and the Unlock Michigan movements. So I really question whether the Republican Party does feel like affiliation with Trump is a penalty, and whether these tentative steps away that we see from some folks in D.C. who are rightfully incensed and upset about what happened to them personally on Wednesday, how much that's going to stick when they start looking at their own personal primary challenges.
I'm sensing, though, that there is going to be more of a backlash, and Trump is somebody that they're going to want purged. And Mitch McConnell has basically admitted this. He would like to see the Trump influence purged from the party. And the question is, what happens to those quote unquote never Trumpers? Do they try to reclaim the mantle of the Republican Party? Do they try to say, hey, look, this is our party? And what does that do to those ranks of people that were Trump supporters? I mean, I'm sensing that there's going to be some sort of a bad breakup here. that's coming in the next few months. And Nancy's sort of nodding. So I'm obviously going to go to the person who agrees with me.
Well, I see both of your points, but I think that Nancy is referring to like the short-term horizon. I think when you get into the long-term horizon for the Republican Party, it's not going to look very good. I mean, they're kind of at this weird spot where the Trump wing of the party is big enough that you absolutely have to have them, and there has to be a certain amount of pandering to them. But at the same time, I mean, you need them to win the primary, but you don't need them to win the general, or rather the other party is more likely to win the general, depending on the district and so forth. But it's I think this is going to end up being a disaster. Now, I wasn't here last week, but I was struck by something that I was reading when I was away, and it was I think it was the New York Times the first day after the maybe it's on Friday the riot, and they were talking some of these people walked into the Capitol and were flabbergasted by what they were seeing, you know, because it's a beautiful building and it's, you know, it's this grand edifice, and they're like, look at all this fancy furniture they got, and you know, and I thought one of the things we're reading about the Trump people is that you hear this a lot. I was never interested in politics until Donald Trump came along, right? I mean, this is a common thing. So number one, they haven't learned the first rule of being a political person, which is sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, sometimes it rains. Okay, so you won the last time. That was great. Now you've lost, and you have to do what everybody does, which is to just kind of regroup and figure out what you did wrong and, you know, course correct, et cetera. The other thing is, I don't get the feeling that these people have even been in their local county courthouse. I mean, Fort Wayne, Indiana has a bomb-ass courthouse that is just as beautiful inside in its own way as the U.S. Capitol is. I mean, you know, it's got the gold leaf and the marble and the scagliola and all this other stuff. And it's like, you know, it's like stop treating politics as your own personal reality show that you find entertaining and actually get involved in it. You know, what is public life after all? I mean, why do we have politicians? Why do we have policy? Because it's how we govern ourselves. It's like, it's what I've been telling people who've been bitching about the election irregularities in Wayne County. It's like, go down, call Janice Winfrey's office, take the training, work as a precinct poll worker, work as a recount, as a absentee ballot counter, and learn how the system works. And then maybe
that's way too much work for them. It's so much easier to take off your shirt and put on your like Game of Thrones hat and just, you know, storm into the Capitol. Like all that calling your local county clerk and getting involved and going to see stuff. No, they're not interested in that. Right. I mean, and they really, you know, they showed that.
Nancy, you saying that is like saying, hey, you people out there, you want to learn about the Civil War? Ulysses Grant book, the 600-page book, read it all and learn about it.
But Nancy, what you're describing are the rules for democracy. They're the rules for people who have an allegiance to a system of government, right? Is that you have to understand when there's a winner, when there's a loser, how to regroup, how to do better and win a coalition that can elect you next time. That's not the allegiance that the Trump's core supporters have. They don't have an allegiance to a system. They have an allegiance to a person. And in an autocracy, those are not the rules, right? Like for an autocrat, the rule is support the autocrat. It's not understand how to work the system of democracy. I mean, I agree, that's what I would argue is it's not that they're looking to, despite what they say about defending the Constitution and preserving democracy via policing the election and the results of it, that's not what they're doing. It's about a person, not a system. And I think that's the bedrock difference between the two.
I would agree. And in that case, the answer is he's 74 years old and fat and eats McDonald's every day. And, you know, he may not live to be to the 2024
election. He's going to live to 150. He's going to live forever.
right. Because those types always do. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, the Republican Party is going to go out and find somebody that is as scary as Trump in terms of his thoughts and how he acts, but much more charismatic. And, I mean, this was my concern in the first impeachment that I really did not, you know, I was like, we can't get rid of Donald Trump because Mike Pence becomes the president And honestly, I think his ideals and ideology is just as scary in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. but it presents so much mm-hmm. better. And mm-hmm. so they will find that guy that speaks to, because it probably will not be a woman, but maybe, but they will find that white man that speaks to all of the shit that Trump has been doing for the last 4 years, that kind of underhandedly does it. And that'll be their guy, and they'll move forward with that. And a lot of those people that were marching on the Capitol and have been so, you know, outraged and think somebody stole the vote from them will transfer their allegiance right to that guy. Because really, some of that stuff they want to believe in, and somebody will say it, but they'll say it in a way that's appealable.
Well, it's never away from Ted Cruz, then. He said,
Ted Cruz is totally unlikable.
I think Nikki Haley is somebody that you might see as a rising star in the party. I think, look, they're about winning. It's not about ideology. Right. Trump had no ideology. Trump was the only guy who could bowl everyone over and win. I mean, I think it's funny about the Republican Party. They wrestle with like, oh, wait a minute. Like last night I'm watching, there's some congressman saying, wait a minute, we're the party of law and order. I don't right. get it. It's like law and order. Trump is a thief. He's a criminal. And then all these people are not about law. I mean, we're all about law and order. I mean, look, the Democrats aren't for, we aren't pro murder, pro rape, pro whatever. I mean, we all want law and order. We have different ideas of what law and order is, but it's funny. The Republicans have sort of lost that mantle. I mean, they used to be with Bush after Clinton, they were the family values. And then, you know, Trump comes in. It's like, no, we can't even get close to that one.
Well, you know? I multiple ex-wives and grabbing women. Yeah, family right. values. Wanting to sleep with his daughter. That just wasn't right. going to be something they could
sell. Sleeping with the porn star. Just not working the family values.
We are turning the page, though. I mean, like I said, 5 more days of this. And that's a good thing. But one of the things I do want to address is, you know, with the impeachment is all the people saying, well, this isn't going to help unify the country. You know, Joe Biden's talking about unification, but the Democrats are all they're doing. Look, I'm sorry. Nobody on the Democratic side is going to be willing to, quote unquote, unify until the Republicans acknowledge that Joe Biden was legitimately elected as the president of the United States. And, you know, you talk about healing. You talk about, you know, admitting you have a problem. You have to admit you have a problem. Recognize you have a problem. They need to come around and say, you know what? We were wrong. You don't even have to say you lied. Just tell me you were wrong.
We admit that we were powerless over alcohol.
What, a friend of mine just forwarded, her neighbor sent some videos with the MyPillow guy and all these people talking about conspiracies where there were satellites from Italy that were changing the votes, and that the people, Nancy Pelosi, is going to get arrested for fraud and stuff like that. At what point do we get away from the narrative of crazy, you know?
Man, well, had an Italian sports car. I mean, we're trusting the Italians to be able to, like, put up some sort of magic satellite thing and switch, you know, 200 million votes. That's something.
Right. Yeah.
That's, well, no disrespect to the Italian who's behind the is running.
There we go. Well, you know, but I mean, I can't see them doing it, though. I mean, but how important is it, you know, for Joe Biden, in terms of the legitimacy of his presidency? I mean, I recognize it as legitimate. Obviously, he's going to be sworn in 5 days from now. But is it important for America that the Republicans say, you know what, this dude was elected and it was fair and he kicked our dude's ass?
I mean, the thing is that I don't think you can wait on that to govern, right? Like, if you're waiting on that, it's not going to happen, right?
Clearly not.
And the people who believe that he didn't win legitimately don't care who says it, right? I mean, you know, they get up there now and say it's because there are a couple of Republican leaders that have said that he won legitimately, but that hadn't changed the other people who believe that he didn't. So I think you got to, you know, I think that Joe Biden is going to have to just move forward and start governing. And that's when people will, I don't even think that they will accept that he won legitimately. It'll just, hopefully it'll make their lives better, so then they won't give a shit that he didn't win legitimately. That's all it ever comes down to. Has he done for me? And once he's done something for me that works for me, I don't give a shit if he was elected legitimately or not, you know? So I think that's what's going to unify the country, if anything, because people will get behind him once they see that their lives got better. And, you know.
The thing is that if you say any big Republican figure who comes out and says Biden won legitimately doesn't convince people. The only thing that person convinces the listeners of is that they're part of the plot. It's a feedback loop where anyone who doesn't agree with you goes into this questionable. I've had Republican, you know, pretty big deal people say this to me, like, you know, if I say this, it won't matter. I'll just lose my ability to communicate. With these folks.
I was going to say one of the bright spots of all this has been, and maybe I'm overstating this, but Peter Meyer, the new congressman who took Justin Amash's place, has really voiced an independence that we used to see in the Republican Party, where there was some reasonableness, like when Nixon finally, at some point, the Republicans went to Nixon and said, "Hey, time to go, buddy." You see people like Peter Meyer, who's just been in office for a couple weeks, and is really sort of establishing himself as an independent voice, and which may not last. We'll see if the Republican Party resists and spits him out, you know, or if he is part of that new trend.
Well, we'll also see how many non-billionaires follow suit.
I'm looking forward to
financing her own campaign.
Right.
I'm looking forward to writing fan fiction about the romance between him and AOC. So, no.
Nancy Pelosi, please.
Speaking of Peter Meyer, like you said, 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, he has walked into this gaping hole in the Republican Party and has allowed himself. I mean, I'm driving to the bagel place today because once again, I failed to get enough breakfast food for my family. And I can hear Michael Barbaro on another podcast, the New York Times podcast. And he's going, you know, today, there are 211 Republicans in Congress. Only 10 voted to impeach President Trump. And I'm like, it's going to be Peter Meyer. And it's like, today, a conversation with one of them, Representative Peter Meyer. And I thought, you know, it's like this guy has gone from a total nobody, and it helps that he's a ginger hottie, but he's gone from a total nobody to a rising star in 2 weeks, because that there's a vacuum in that wing of the party right now.
Go ahead.
Doesn't endorse sedition is also like a really low bar.
Right.
I mean, no offense to Representative Meyer.
Afford his own body armor, because he did say he was also purchasing body armor and looking into armed guards so he can go to like do his work every day. But I think he's also young enough. And if he's smart enough, he sees the future. I mean, he is a billionaire. He's young. He could be the future of the party. Listen, again, Mitch McConnell's got to die someday. I don't know when that's going to be, because clearly he drinks like vampire blood and his hands turn black. And like, we don't know if he's ever going to be gone. But at this point, he's still there. But at some point, some of the people who have like, you know, just been so into that and into Trump will go away. And so, I mean, I think he should be looking to see like where is his future right away.
My favorite thing that he has done thus far is apologize to the Capitol Police for the behavior of some of his party mates who are refusing to go through the metal detectors and acting this is some intrusion. He said, "Hey, I'm sorry, some of my people are assholes." And I thought that was great. And, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about this, because obviously after you have what happened last Wednesday at the Capitol, of course they're going to put in some metal detectors. And I've gone through metal detectors at City Hall every single day when I was going in there. That was not a big deal. How many kids go through metal detectors just to go to freaking school every day? And these people feign outrage that they actually might have to go through a metal detector.
Congresswoman Tlaib said that in a tweet, and it was the best. She was like, "Welcome to what my kids in my school district, in the school district I represent, go through every day." Like, how many of us have been going through everything, you know, going through metal detectors for God knows how many years?
For just about everything that we do. But the thing about this is, for people who always claim to be against the quote unquote elites, they sure like the perks of not having to do the things that normal people have to do. Like, you know, outrage that, oh, I don't have to go through that metal detector. I'm sorry. You're showing your true colors as to the type of person that you are and what you actually care about when you complain about something like this. And if you're trying to get through there by carrying a piece in your purse or on your person, well, you're violating the rules that have been established for a long time. again, suggesting that the rules do not apply to you. And that is not cool. I mean, it's the kind of thing that needs to be called out. It's those little things that give you a glimpse into somebody's character. And I mean, it's on display in so many different ways right now.
Yeah, that was all the speeches after folks returned to the chamber on Wednesday night were all had this tenor from some of our GOP, well, not all, some of our GOP members of Congress had this tenor of, I didn't think this could happen to me. You know, I this is a bridge too far. You know, I thought I could flirt with these groups and endorse them and say up until the day before, you know, the fiction that the election was stolen and encourage this forceful, you know, pushback. I mean, I don't know how many of these folks. I mean, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that if you really said to most of these members of Congress, if you know, should Americans storm into face the Capitol, they'd probably be say no. But nonetheless, they participated in and nurtured the fantasy that enabled all of this to happen. But then I think when they realized that it would also, you know, impact them, it was just like that was just too much. They couldn't, just that tenor was so surprising. No, I guess it shouldn't be surprising. It was so notable.
Very, very true. Let's switch gears here for just a little time, because like I said, we're about to turn the page on Donald Trump, and he is going to the dustbin of history. I mean, he's going to, you know, his shadow will be there for a little while. But, you know, look, we've got a president coming in, an actual president in Joe Biden, delivered a speech last night outlining his plan for COVID relief, talking about stimulus checks, talking about a vaccine distribution plan, actually getting the federal government to take responsibility for doling these things out in a way that the Trump administration never did. And for me, I mean, just the difference between how he is reacting to this and the stances that he is taking and the way he's addressing the nation about what he intends to do is something we haven't seen in 4 years. And I wonder if in any weird way that is having a calming effect, because here's a guy who's coming into office in 5 days and he's like, I'm going to hit the ground running. I've got a plan, an actual plan. Now, whether Congress goes along with it remains to be seen. But at the same time, he's at least outlining things with actual detail, not just saying it's going to be a beautiful plan or you'll see it in 2 weeks. He laid it out. Here it is. This is what I want to do. And I mean, for me and Alan, I mean, you know, you and I are a little bit older, I think, than some of the folks that are on here. And we've seen a lot of different presidents.
He's so kind to us, Portia.
I know he really is. Because I'm like, job, I don't period. Think you are, Craig.
No. I don't know. Well, we might be close, Portia. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Craig and I have been around since FDR.
That's right. Well, hey, this did have a big sort of New Deal feel to it last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can, you know, I mean, part of it, I think they're going to benefit. The Biden administration is going to benefit from getting out some of the kinks of rolling out the vaccines and stuff like that. But you certainly don't get a sense of Trump being very committed to making sure that people get the vaccine. He's on the golf course. He's creating sedition. He's whatever. He's not into it. I mean, you get a sense that this administration really wants to correct things and do it right and have a national policy, which is what we've been missing this whole time.
Well, the thing that I think is really different, well, I mean, there's a lot of things that are really different about Joe Biden and Donald Trump, but one thing that I think is coming to the fore right now is that Joe Biden actually enjoys governing. I think he actually wants to be president. And I don't think Donald Trump really wanted to be president. I mean, I think he wanted the publicity, and I think he wanted the prestige, but I mean, he clearly has zero interest in the actual job of being president. Whereas I think Biden really enjoys all the parts of it. I think he enjoys talking to people, hearing what they care about. I think he enjoys policy. I think he enjoys, you can't spend as long as he did in the Senate if you don't enjoy deal making and policy. And I think he's got to be one of the most qualified people to ever hold the office. I mean, he wasn't my first choice, but he's totally qualified.
You know, I don't have much in common with Donald Trump, but the one thing I do have is that I feel like what he's doing right now is what I did my senior year in high school, which is like not do what I was supposed to be doing, going out for breakfast, skipping class, doing whatever, never studying, never handing in assignments. And I feel like that is what Donald Trump's senior year, you know?
There's this very revealing detail in one of these stories about the relationship between Pence and Trump and the fraying of that relationship, you know, that culminated with the, are you a patriot or are you another P word? And they had this detail that Pence maintained his relationship with Trump by heading into work and going to the Oval Office around mid-morning and then just hanging out until Trump showed up, which wasn't the point of the story, but it was kind of notable that Trump, you know, doesn't roll into the Oval before, like, you know, 11 noon, then maybe takes a long lunch and then knocks off at 3.
Well, I want to ask Portia about this for just a second, because Portia worked in the Obama administration. Also, there's a pretty strong friendship between Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan and President, now President-elect Biden. You've had an opportunity to actually, you know, the guy. I'm not sure how well, but I mean, at the same time, does he strike you as somebody who is, you know, putting the right people in place, one, and two, is actually going to follow up on the things that he says he's going to do, because we've had 4 years of that not happening at all?
Yeah, I think Nancy's spot on. I mean, I think he's going to enjoy the job. I mean, I don't think he, you know, I mean, listen, I think he highly considered it the last time and then decided for a lot of family reasons not to do it. I think he certainly has considered his age. And I think he really looked at where the country was and, like, he had to, you know, that he had the best chance, which I didn't think so a year ago. If you'd asked me a year ago, I said, no way will it be Joe Biden, but it is. But I do think he's going to do a good job. I do think, and I think he knows that people are going to be watching. Like, he's, you know, because we still have a progressive side of the Democratic Party, too, that's going to be forcing him to do some of the things that may not be the most comfortable for him as well. But I think, you know, I don't want to equate progressives in any way, shape or form as sort of the fringe of the Democratic Party. But I think they're going to be good for pushing somebody like Joe Biden, who has been kind of entrenched in that world for so long, to do some things that are moving this country forward rather than just kind of doing the status quo.
You know, I'm with you, Portia. I didn't think he was going to be the nominee. He wasn't my first choice. I think we all know my first choice with Elizabeth Warren, queen of my tribe, the quirky nerd ladies who like plans and policy. I'm gonna go into a mild, like, reverie thinking about her. All right, I'm back with you now. You know, I did, like, after it was clear he was getting the nomination, it's like, if any time during the last 4 years someone had said, you can take this hammer and whack your pinky toe with it, and we can trade Donald Trump out for Joe Biden, we would have all been lining up out the door for hammers, right? We would have whacked both our pinky toes. So, you know, let's feel that way. Let's just be so grateful that we have such a superior alternative. I mean, again, he's really qualified. He's talented. At some of the debates, you know, folks had cleared the stage, and he's, like, down, like, you know, talking to people in the crowd and, like, doing selfies. Like, I mean, it's prior to COVID, of course. I mean, this is a guy who really does relate to people, which is, you know, again, a low bar, like, has normal human emotions, but, you know, I'll take it. And I think that, like Portia said, I think he's being very thoughtful about, he's also seems to be someone who knows what his strengths are and what are not his strengths, and to be able to fill those with staffing.
Well, before we get too far into this, I do want to talk a little bit about one of the grievances that many people on the right have in this post-election period that we've seen, especially in the wake of Wednesday's events, is, you know, so many people being taken off of social media, Twitter telling Donald Trump to go to hell, Facebook doing the same, Snapchat even, and I don't think the president's on Snapchat that I'm aware of, but I mean, all these social media platforms are basically denying him a voice at this point in time, and also Parler getting booted from their servers and basically ceasing to exist at this point in time. You hear a lot of people screaming about the loss of free speech. Obviously, the government is not in control of those companies. It's a private company. So that argument is moot. But given how much of a communication platform this is for people in this day and age, when we don't actually talk to actual human beings most of the time, we do it via social media. I mean, is there a valid concern that these companies have too much, you know, too much control over who gets to say
what?
I mean, there are First Amendment issues. And then again, these are privately owned platforms. They're publishers who decide. But the reality is that if I I started to wonder after a while, like, why are they not suspending his account? If I wrote what he wrote so frequently, my account would have been suspended. Me and it's really, they make it sound like it's just like they're picking on the conservatives or whatever, but we're subject to the same rules. Oh. That if we start to, you know, stir up the pot and say, let's go kill the governor, let's do this or that, there's a chance my account might be suspended.
Yeah, no, I kind of disagree with you. I mean, their terms of service are vaguely articulated and really inconsistently applied. And, you know, they have like carved out this leader of the free world exception for him for years that they decided ban him for some of this speech. But there's a lot of other people who say horrible things on there and don't get banned. But I think it's also possible to be glad that open door to hate speech and sedition and incitement has been closed. And also at the same time, be worried about how much control these platforms have over the way that we communicate. And I imagine that everyone in this conversation has been concerned about that this whole time it's been happening, but there really wasn't anything any of us could do about it. I mean, we could not participate in these platforms, but we're not going to do that, are we?
No.
He also could have held a press briefing like normal presidents do. Over the course of his presidency, regular press briefings to update, you know, what was going on at the White House, what was going on throughout his administration. He's the one that chose to use Twitter as the only way of communicating with the American people. So in terms of him being knocked off Twitter with only like, what, 10 days to go, at least in his presidency, I won't use the language I'm thinking, but, well, you know, whatever. I mean,
well,
Twitter is an unfiltered way of him saying exactly what he wants without the media, you know, twisting whatever. He gets it purely, it's pure unadulterated Trump. I see there's concerns about the First Amendment and about them controlling who says what. But the reality is that, I mean, I think the higher profile you are, at some point it begs the question of how much do you let that go on for?
Right. I mean, if you've ever tried to have anything taken down about yourself on somebody else's website, you know, they walk away with their hands in the air going, hey, you know, we're just the platform. We have nothing to do with this. But, you know, suddenly now they're getting medieval with some of these things.
I mean, I think any woman who is in public life has experienced abuse on social media, and there generally is an absolute lack of concern. I mean, I had a private message from a complete stranger on Facebook saying that I should burn in hell, you liberal C-word. And when I reported it to Facebook, they said that that didn't violate their terms of service because some things may be upsetting, but it doesn't mean they're abuse.
A friend of mine is serving a 30-day Facebook jail term for using the term white trash. And you're telling me that the C-word doesn't count as hate speech?
I mean, and I would actually argue exactly the opposite. It doesn't upset me that a complete stranger said mean things to me. It is abuse, though. Like, yeah, that person doesn't have the power to upset me. It's like my, you know, my best friend telling me off would be upsetting. A complete stranger, that's abuse. But I mean, it's inconsistent. The rules are inconsistent. They're not well applied. They've left women and people of color very, very vulnerable to threats, and they don't really care. I mean, I often think that we would
Here's my other concern is that you can take Parler off the server and sort of shut him down. You can take Donald Trump off Twitter, but people will find a way to communicate with one another because there actually are these old kind of devices called telephones that we used to use a long time ago to talk to people. And so my real fear is that, you know, stuff that people want to plan is even more driven underground. And so it's harder to find out what the plans are for, you know, the next year.
Well,
I think the single best argument for keeping these people on these platforms is so that they can make their stupid plans in plain sight and we can all know about them.
Although I will say FBI normally, but not always, has done a pretty good job of infiltrating. These guys they show up at the Capitol trying to recruit people standing out there. They're not that selective about who they recruit.
Are you willing to grow your goatee of alarming length? Then you're.
If you go and infiltrate, you guys, we can get you some of those little hats with the.
Yeah.
Oh, I want the water buffalo, Loyal Order of Water Buffalo hats. That's what those are. Anybody remember the Flintstones? Sorry. Real quick. How concerned is everybody about violence over the next few days? Just real quick responses. I mean, you know, you're talking about this stuff getting driven further underground and making it hard to determine what it is their plans are. But what's everybody's concern that something bad is going to happen? Or do you think it'll be mostly just people out there venting and not being violent?
I think the show of force in Washington is so overwhelming at this point. I think you're going to see very few people showing up. I'm not concerned, you know, Lansing a little bit more when people are showing up with their AK-47s. I'm not concerned in Washington. I think a lot of people are going to stay away.
I feel like what happened in the Capitol last week was the peak of Studio 54. And now what's happened, and the only people who are going to show up now are the losers from Iowa who really want to get into Studio 54, and then they'll get in and they're like, what's the big deal? So I kind of feel like, no, there's not. I feel like we passed the peak for that. It's
the
not
cool people are already gone, is what you're saying.
The cool people have already been arrested. Yeah, so that's
what you're going. One of the ways that, I mean, so it seems obvious that there was some coordination for what happened last week, despite what we were hearing earlier that it was a spontaneous whatever, because very few of them seem to have been armed. And so it seems at least clear, because this is a very open carry activist crowd, right? This is a group of people that were showing up at the Capitol with guns. So for the fact I haven't really heard of any reports of, I mean, I know a lot of people were arrested in D.C. for carrying without a permit, but inside the Capitol, very few, if any, people seem to have been armed. And that, to me, first of all, suggests that there was some guidance that went out saying leave your weapons at home. But if people in the Capitol had been armed, I think things could have gone a lot worse. The more video we're seeing out of what happened inside, which was not in plentiful supply while things were going down on Wednesday, you know, just the amazing crush of people, the sheer number, the sheer chaos, the reaction when that unfortunate young woman was shot. If there had been guns in the crowd, I really, six people have died, right? I am getting every day with revelations that come out. It just really seems miraculous that only six people died. That video of the police officer being crushed as a crowd pushes, screaming. I'm having nightmares about that. I mean, and that's absent weapons. So I wasn't worried about violence until suddenly, I mean, I kind of like unsure whether I was being paranoid or whether I was being smart to worry about violence. I mean, I was kind of paranoid. It'll be fine. But then things happened that were unimaginable. So what's next? Sorry, Portia.
I don't know. I think that they very much came to do violence. I think when we start to hear about some of the things they did have, it's just, you know, luck that it didn't happen in the way that they wanted to. I got to be honest with you. I think they didn't know who the hell to shoot at or to tase or to do whatever. You know, for them, it might not have been as obvious because there weren't that many people of color or black people inside the Capitol. So they didn't know who the hell they should be shooting at that point. Everybody was gone. They couldn't find anybody. But like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like, again, this whole sense of driving folks underground, the kind of violence they're going to do. You know, we've seen little, I don't know. I think we've seen little sparks of that around the country. And I'm not so sure. I don't think they go back to D.C. because I do think the presence there is so enormous. And it will be continue to grow in the next 5 days or 4 days, whatever we have till the inauguration. But in other places, I think people need to be a little bit more concerned. I think they need to be a little bit more worried about and just a little guarded about, you know, what people might do. Because I do think that fringe is really still very upset and very unhappy. Best we can hope for is that, like the guy who died at the Capitol, you know, he's trying to get a painting off the wall. He forgets that his taser is in his pants and he tases his scrotum and then causes himself to have a heart attack. And that's how he died. So that's one of the six. So if they're all that freaking stupid, we should be okay. But if they're not,
I think when you talk about what some of the intent was over at the Capitol, I mean, we see some of the people with the plastic handcuffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was some intent to detain some people illegally. And then also one of the D.C. cops was talking that they were grabbing stuff, grabbing his badge and then trying to get his gun. And they were saying, shoot him with his own gun.
Well, and I wanted to end this part of the segment on that guy, because I think the most important thing that he said in that little snippet of tape he gave to CNN yesterday when they interviewed him for the first time, he was talking about that experience of having people trying to grab his gun and saying, kill him with his own gun. But then some people got around and realized this was getting out of control and protected him a little bit until some other police could get him out of there.
Right.
And they said, well, what do you want to say to those people that helped you out? He said, well, I guess I come down to it this way. Thank you, but fuck you for being there.
Right, exactly. Do I have to thank you for saving my life after you caused the threat in the first place?
You know, and I thought that was exactly what he should have said. You know, thank you for not killing me. I mean, you know, it's just...
That one video of that one African-American officer on his own facing on that crowd, watching that the first time, I thought I was about to watch that man get murdered.
Yeah.
I kept wondering, why are you running up the stairs? You have a baton in your hand. It's like, turn around and crack some head.
I don't want to see that kind of reaction from the police, obviously, but at the same time,
But when you're being chased through the Capitol,
when you see the mob people in the lead, like, you know, startled, you know, sort of bulking up and like trying to like push up on him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, I know that they're cops and that they're trained to deal with this type of situation, but I can't think of a lot of people who would stand by themselves in one doorway facing that aggressive mob advancing deliberately toward them.
But they were running up the stairs. I wanted him to stop at the top of the stairs, turn, and then like do one of these things with his foot, you know, and just like right in the chest of the lead guy would be like rolling.
He wasn't Gerard Butler.
Yeah.
White House down. All right. So hold on. We've got to move on here because we definitely need to talk about what happened yesterday here in our state. Charges filed against former Governor Rick Snyder. They're misdemeanor charges nonetheless, but in regards to the Flint water crisis and how that was handled, some of the charges against people like Nick Lyon, much more serious. Manslaughter charges, 15-year felonies on each of the 9 charges he's dealing with. And Eden Wells and a number of other officials that were charged yesterday. This all came down pretty quickly once word got out that there were some charges coming. There are some people that will suggest that this is not enough for Rick Snyder to be dealing with, a couple of misdemeanors, which is, a $1,000 fine, and you know, he goes on his way. But I'll tell you what, this is serious. This is not to be trifled with. And frankly, before, it didn't look like Rick Snyder was going to be facing any music at all on this one. Now, I don't know. I mean, it was shocking to me to see a former governor in an arraignment yesterday. And I don't know how I feel about this because I'm angry about what happened in Flint. I also wonder whether or not these are cases that can be effectively made and argued.
I wonder. Nancy wrote something about this.
I covered the Flint water crisis pretty early on. We started covering it in August. We wrote the news on Dr. Mona's findings that the blood levels were elevated in kids in Flint, which sort of settled the conversation. Previously, there had been like our lead levels are elevated. No, they're not. And then it's like, oh, well, the kids are actually suffering. So this is clearly pretty conclusive. There were months of the state saying that things were fine when things weren't fine. And for a while in this reporting, I was willing to give the benefit of the doubt that they were blindsided by this, that they were scrambling with the situation as it developed. But then when they started releasing emails, it was very clear that they had known about this for months, that they had Miguel Del Toro from the EPA saying the lead is elevated in the water, and they're saying he's a rogue employee. Residents of Flint saying our water looks awfully bad and it smells bad and it's making us sick, just absolutely shut down. GM saying we can't use the water in our plant because it's too corrosive. Mark Edwards, a MacArthur Genius Grant recipient, coming in and saying I'm testing this water and I'm finding lead. And the MDEQ spokesperson saying, this guy's whole deal is lead. It's like a rabbit he pulls out of the hat everywhere they go. Dr. Mona saying, the blood levels in children are elevated. And a spokesman for former Governor Snyder saying to me, where did she even get her data? This is spliced and diced. So essentially they had months of many, many, many people saying, hey, your water seems to have lead in it. And a huge amount of effort dedicated to painting each of these people or groups of people as cranks with an agenda and no real interest in figuring out what was going on or making it right. And when Michigan Department of Health, I wrote a column about this. I looked it up last night and when I was writing the thing that I wrote for today, when an MDHHS epidemiologist found that there wasn't just a seasonal variation on blood lead levels, the word in the department was, maybe we had to do another one. And then they came out with one that said everything was fine. And people inside the department said, is this person really qualified to have done this? And they said, psh, no, we're going to put this one out. I mean, this wasn't like one decision or one decision made in good faith that didn't turn out. This was months and months and months of intentional decision making that did not point to what finding out was happening in Flint. We had the reporters who were covering this. I'm sorry, I'm going on here, but people are screaming at me about this on Twitter right now, and I'm getting some of what I'm going to write when I get done with this. You know, we had the state government said, oh no, we didn't make that decision. It was the city council. We let them make the decision. It's like, no, we had an emergency manager in Flint. And it's like, oh,
right. They didn't make any decisions. City council didn't get to make any decisions.
Right. We had to spend weeks, if not months, pinning down the self-evident truth that an emergency manager calls the shots when they're appointed. That in this one instance, the emergency manager did not graciously decide to stand down and let the council make this decision independently, which was the line the state peddled for a long, long time. And we had to all extensively document this. Then there was a time when it became really clear that they hadn't used corrosion control in the water. And then there was a press conference where Dan Wyatt, former head of the MDEQ, came out and said, oh, we did use corrosion control. It's like, no, you didn't.
No, you didn't. They didn't even have the equipment that could inject it into the water. Again,
this wasn't one little casual decision that was made once. This was these were a series of decisions made over months, and a lot of it involved, I'm sorry, lying.
It was a snowball.
Don't be sorry. They lied. They lied. Right. They should go to prison. Yeah. They do not say I'm sorry for that. They poisoned a freaking town. They should all be charged. Snyder getting charged with two misdemeanors, I know it's probably very disappointing to the people of Flint. I will say that having Dana Nessel and Kim Worthy looking into what charges they thought that they could prove, I think that they charge according to what they think they can convict on in court. So, yeah, would you want to see more charges, more serious charges? Yeah, but if it means that we're going to charge him, but he's not going to get convicted of anything, right? Because at the end of the day, Snyder's going to have this legacy of poisoning the city of Flint.
And part of running the show means you're responsible for these decisions. Okay. If you didn't know what was happening, how is it not willful neglect?
All right, Alan, go ahead.
I was going to say, talking about the two misdemeanor charges. I mean, we know misdemeanor charges. He's not going to go. I mean, there's a maximum 1 year in jail, and there's two counts on that. But we know even if convicted on that, he's not going to jail. I mean, he's not a danger to society, whatever. They're not going to give it. They're who knows what. But it strikes me as kind of like a little bit like it reminds me of like back in the 80s when the U.S. Attorney's Office during the Vista sludge hauling thing wanted to name Coleman Young as an unindicted co-conspirator. And it was kind of like we want to stick it to him, but we don't have really enough, but we want to put it on the record that he's involved in this in some way. And Judge Damasio said, no, you either charge him or shut up. And I almost feel this is a little bit almost close to being an unindicted co-conspirator there. I mean, people died. They're suggesting that there was a relationship with the Legionnaires' disease, that there are children who potentially have learning disabilities as a result of the lead in the water. That, I mean, we're talking about an extremely serious, serious case here. And to charge him with the misdemeanor, I almost feel like either charge him with the felony or don't charge him. But the misdemeanor just seems kind of half-assed.
Well, they can win that, though.
I want to talk to you for just a second. Yeah. What does everybody think of Dana Nessel's decision to withdraw the original charges and redo this whole thing? Because there were some questions about that original investigation and whether or not it was done with the type of zest and zeal it needed. And she took a lot of flack at the beginning of her term for doing that.
I just want to note real quickly that both two different attorney generals from two different parties who brought charges against people in Flint have been dismissed by naysayers as being a political stunt. So how can it be a political stunt for Bill Schuette and Dana Nessel? Because I'm pretty sure they're not on the
same. They don't agree on anything.
Not
right.
Working toward the same goals. I'm sorry. That's my one little thing there. But somebody who's more lawyerly should.
I think there was a question during the investigation. I mean, Schuette had this independent investigation, yet he was overseeing it. It didn't seem that independent, And it also seemed, I mean, he was running for governor.
Governor,
I mean,
right.
He was running for governor. And so it seemed very political at the time.
Well, he never interviewed the governor, too. I would say that's a major, his investigators didn't interview the governor. And I would wonder, I don't know if this new team did, but that was, I think, a major, called out as a major question at the time.
Yeah. And I mean, it's what's difficult for me on this one is I know so many of the people involved in this personally, you know, that I've dealt with over the years, and you're just sitting there watching this happen to them and you can't help but feel bad. But at the same time, you're like, man, you guys screwed this up. Somebody must be accountable for this. And to watch it all unfold is really just shocking to me. And of course, we'll all be watching very, very carefully as these things go to trial, because there's going to be some pretty nasty testimony that takes place there. And we're already seeing people like line up against each other. And hey. All right, well, we're running out of time. We've only got about 5 minutes left. And I didn't want to leave that behind because that is such a hugely important story for the state of Michigan. And to do this right is really critical. But it is time for our weekly nominees for Schmuck of the Week. I broke my own rule last week by naming Donald Trump Schmuck of the Week. And Nancy, you weren't here for it, but I think I made a pretty impassioned plea as to why it needed to happen.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was fine. Because sometimes, you know what? You come out of retirement.
Yeah.
So that was it. So,
special Oscar, the Irving Thalberg Award of Schmuck of the Week.
Lifetime achievement, schmuckitude. Yeah. So who wants to go first this time around? Should it be me or should we let somebody else go first today?
I'll go first. I got an easy one. I didn't go as deep as I should have. And I'm just giving mine this week to Josh Hawley, because everything he has done for the last week has been just a disaster. But most importantly, I don't think you can have your privilege on display enough when you cry about freedom of speech because your Simon & Schuster book deal got canceled. Like, dude, that is not, you don't absolutely have a right to to Simon & Schuster publishing your book. So if the shit gets canceled, you just got to live with it. But nobody's banning you from saying and espousing your vows or your views wherever you want to go. You just don't get a book deal. You don't get to make money off of it.
You like, it's amazing. Regnery.
Huh?
You have to go to Regnery, the publisher that handles
Right. And it's just like, so, I mean, like, we're in this cancel culture because I don't get a book deal and I don't make millions off of my views. And it's so horrible. And we need to be very concerned about this. Like, well, dude, guess what? I'm not concerned about this.
Marcia,
your book deal.
It's a free market decision, right?
This is the dude that is angling to be that guy that gets the Trump followers, but who's much more sophisticated and savvy than Donald Trump.
He could be worried about a book deal because the Trump followers aren't reading his book any freaking way. He doesn't need to get a book. He just needs to get a Twitter account. He'll be fine.
Kill all the libs or something.
Don't worry about
that.
A book.
Then they'll read it. If he titles it "Kill All the Libs," then he'll be all over that one.
But we hear so much about how great the market is, and this is clearly a market decision, and now the market is wrong.
Yeah. Wait, how it goes.
All right, who wants to go next? Al, how about let's go Langle here.
Girl boy. Yeah.
I'm gonna go real quickly with the great Congressman Jim Jordan, who had the chutzpah to say, why are we doing this impeachment? Why can't we just have a orderly transition to president like we've always had? I mean, here's a guy who's helping, you know, put logs on the fire to, you know, stir up things. And then he's like, why can't we just have an orderly transition? I thought that was so, I laughed. I thought it was funny, but I think it's so horrible. These people don't even see.
Jim Jordan is a
Rodney
multi-
King moment. Although if somebody aligned him with Rodney King, he probably took bricks. But, you know, can't we all just get along now?
Right.
Well,
and now they're the party. Republicans are the party of unity. Why can't unify and come together?
Let's work together. Get over it.
Yeah.
I'm sending thoughts and prayers to unifying right now.
Jim Jordan has been nominated many, many times on this program for Schmuck of the Week. All right, Nancy Kaffer. Nancy Kaffer.
I normally don't do a Schmuck of the Week because I feel like
I gave
it's
you
mean.
The option to opt out, but you chose not to.
This week, I read the story about allegedly Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump wouldn't let their Secret Service detail use one of the 6.5 bathrooms in their manse, and that they had to use bathrooms at the neighbors, at the Obamas, at random like Chipotle's,
John on the sidewalk.
And
in
the story is so amazing because first of all, there's the thing where the the White House says this didn't happen, but they offer no explanation for the Portageon or for the lease that eventually the Secret Service made with a neighbor to be able to rent a basement apartment so they could use the bathroom there. So this story has everything. This crazy thing, how they're not allowed to use the toilet, the frosty scorn of the upscale neighbors who are so upset about having this Portageon on their sidewalk in their affluent neighborhood. The fact that the detail that will haunt me forever, that the Secret Service detail was allowed to use the bathroom at the Obama Command Center until someone left an unpleasant mess. Which I gotta say, I'm imagining some like crusty 65-year-old Secret Service agent strolling out of that bathroom with a newspaper under his arm, beaming proudly. And just like everything in this piece, and then the across the street neighbor who winds up leasing the basement apartment for a grand a month or something, a couple grand a month, and it's like, I almost don't blame this lady. Like, why is it her job to furnish a toilet to the Secret Service? But yeah, it's like almost $150,000 of taxpayer money for, because the supposedly the Kushner Trump family,
because she wouldn't, because Ivanka wouldn't let somebody else poop and pee in one of her six bathrooms.
This started in 2017, so this is not like, you can't even say it's COVID and they didn't want strangers in the house. Also, I feel like the 6.5 bathrooms, you could maybe cordon one
off so people could get in and use the bathroom.
Jared and Ivanka together, co-schmucks of the week.
That's not a bad one. Now, okay, yeah. if we're going to follow the boy-girl thing, it would be my turn then, I think.
Okay,
next. I'm going to go with another tale of white privilege. This one from Brian Kilmeade, who, of course, is one half or one third of the comedy trio that is Fox and Friends. I don't know if anybody ever watches this program, Fox in the Morning.
I was watching it the other day.
It's unintentional comedy, but they were talking about a potential stimulus package that was going to be introduced by Joe Biden, and talking about whether or not there were going to be $2,000 checks to go along with the $6,000 or $600 checks that already went out. But Brian Kilmeade, who makes $4 million per year, said, I know how Americans think. They don't want $2,000 checks. They want to work their way out of this problem right now. That's what America's about. They want to work. They don't want your handouts. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, they would love to work, but they can't, because we're in the middle of a freaking pandemic that your dude didn't do anything about. Right now, I know a whole lot of people that really do want that $2,000 check, that could really use that $2,000 check. So to have some white dude who makes $4 million a year, who has not been out of work for a day in this whole thing, and tell me that I don't want $2,000, or that somebody else doesn't want $2,000, he can kiss my ass. He is my
good for you. All right, I guess that leaves me.
It does.
Michonne Maddox. The first time I ever heard her, she was being interviewed on a podcast run by two journalists who were lobbing her one softball after another. And she came off, I think I said this in a Facebook or a tweet this week, she reminded me of the character in Dr. Zhivago, Lara's husband, the young man who rises to the position of propaganda minister. And she was as humorless and as dour and as a true Trump believer as anyone I can imagine. I don't believe she has repented one iota of this belief, and she's going to be co-chairman of the Michigan GOP, which is good news for Democrats.
Well, the Michigan GOP has put up some stellar folks in recent years, have they not?
Dave Ajma. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, but that's not a bad nominee at all. And kid, just in case you're wondering, Dr. Zhivago, good film. Omar Sharif.
Yeah.
If you wanted the Cliff Notes version, watch the movie.
Next time you have a spare 4.5 hours, sit down
and
watch that.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, but you know, you can always, people binge like, a show for 4.5 hours without thinking twice about it. So it can be done.
I watched a Bollywood movie called Lagan last year.
Good.
In 40-minute increments. It was great. It was a 4-hour movie. It was great. So,
all right. Okay. Real quick before we go, who's binging what? Anybody watching anything good? Because we're all still stuck at home.
I'm finishing up Shameless.
Shameless. I like that show quite a bit.
11th season.
Season 5 of The Expanse just started, and everyone should be watching The Expanse.
Ooh, The Expanse. So very good.
I've never even heard of it.
Episodes, if anyone hasn't seen that, with Matt LeBlanc, is really, really
a good. Yes.
Okay. Well, Portia's clearly been reading quite a bit, as we can see behind her. But
yeah. But no, it's like nothing I should recommend to anyone. These are the books I was reading before COVID. With the COVID stress, the stuff I'm reading is not anything of any kind of mental exercise. Basically, I'm reading trash. Star Magazine.
And Impostures. I'm told Impostures is good.
I'm going to also maybe guess that three of the five of us here, Bridgerton.
Which no, one couldn't get into Bridgerton.
I watched it. I watched Bridgerton. It was interesting.
I didn't watch three.
I don't know. I mean, what are you going to do? I also finished up season three of the new Star Trek Discovery. So, you know.
Pretend It's a City on Netflix. It's the conversation with Fran Lebowitz and Martin Scorsese. So.
And Your Honor on Showcase on Showtime with
and Snowfall.
Bryan Cranston.
Okay,
all right, so guys.
All on FX.
TV guide.
All right,
we got to wrap it up. I want to thank Alan and Nancy, of course, Nancy Derringer and Alan Lengel of Deadline Detroit for being here once again. We always appreciate it. Nancy Kaffer of the Detroit Free Press, thank you very much, and I appreciate your willingness to participate in our Schmuck of the Week nominee. Thank you very much. Portia Roberson of Focus Hope, thank you once again for being here. Thanks to Michael Lucido for engineering the broadcast as he does every week. I appreciate that. Thanks to the Greenhouse of Walled Lake for giving us much needed supplies in this day and age. Cool place, Greenhouse Walled Lake. We appreciate their sponsorship.
All right.
And don't forget, Deadline Detroit, deadlinedetroit.com. All of your nudes needs met there every single day. News needs. And of course, the great newsletter. Sign up for that Nancy, of course, authors every week. It's always great. And of course, you can find my podcast, a bunch of other stuff there each and every day. So go check it out and become a member. DeadlineDetroit.com/membership. It's easy to do. All right. We've got to go. Alan?
Stay home safely.
Looking for the latest news and information about our great city of Detroit? Head to DeadlineDetroit.com. For one-stop shopping for the most important stories of the day. Deadline Detroit has some of the best journalists in town, providing original reporting, videos, and podcasts that keep you in the know about everything happening in Detroit. Become a member today, and you'll automatically be entered into a drawing for prizes, including gift cards to some of Detroit's best restaurants. Go to DeadlineDetroit.com/membership.